Hey everyone, it's Reverend Brian Blair with you again here on Crossroads Today. Hope you're all doing well. This is WHUS 91.7 Stores here in Connecticut on the campus of UConn. We have a wonderful guest today, Lisa Day Lewis. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Let's see here. You're not guest three, you're guest two. Who turned on the mic for guest three? There you go. That should be about right.
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. No, how about we try this again and turn on guest two instead of guest one? How you doing, Lisa?
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, it's like magic. great to have you. So in the beginning of the show, I like to do announcements, but there are really no announcements except to say, hey, everybody out there in UConn and any other college around the country, congratulations to all the people who are graduating. And congratulations to all the people who survived another semester. I hope everyone's doing well, that you're going to get together with your family and friends and celebrate these great accomplishments. Congratulations to you. Lisa, you have a center, a Bhakti Center. Do you have any announcements that you'd like to share about anything that might be going on?
Well, for those of you who don't know about the Bhakti Center, we just opened in February, and we have regular yoga classes going on every week, and we have different events that change throughout the month that are open to everyone. And we have a Facebook page, Bhakti Center CT, that has all those classes and events. So as people listen to the show and they want to hear more about us, find us on Facebook and you can get some more information.
Very good. Thank you very much. By the way, we don't do any call-ins on the show, but if you'd like to contribute, please go to my Twitter page, at Rev Blair. You can also go to my website, at RevBlair.com, to check out the podcast and also the YouTube video later on today. Lisa, let's get back to you. So you were talking about the Bhakti Center. How did you come to open the Bhakti Center?
It's a good question. Well, last year, I opened an Ayurveda practice in my home. I'm an Ayurvedic health counselor, and I quickly realized that by networking with people in the community and growing my circle of healer practitioner friends, that the center would be something that people would benefit from. And then I could practice my Ayurveda there, but we could offer other things to the community as well, and other people could come together. So it's been, it formed out of these relationships with these wonderful people in our community.
You use two terms that I think in modern Western civilization here in the great United States of America might be unfamiliar to a lot of people. Let's start with Ayurveda.
So Ayurveda is a Sanskrit word and actually means knowledge of life. And the system of yoga stems from Ayurveda. It's an ancient system of health and well-being, and it really is an umbrella of most of the things that we kind of encounter in the West as healing modalities, diet, lifestyle that are associated with yoga. So meditation is part of Ayurveda, Reiki is part of Ayurveda, sound healing, all of these things kind of fall under the umbrella. So by learning the science of Ayurveda, you get exposed to all of these different arts, healing arts, yes.
And you use the term bhakti.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So bhakti is something that I actually came into contact with before Ayurveda as a teenager, actually, through an organization called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And bhakti yoga is one of the paths, the four paths of yoga, where you actually, the goal is to connect with God through service.
So my understanding of yoga is that it's a form of exercise. And of course, it also is a way to meditate or to meditation. But you just use the term service. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I'm trying to reconcile. How are you serving while you're doing yoga?
It's a good question. So yoga, actually, the word yoga means to yoke or to unite with God. Mm. So a lot of Westerners are more familiar with yoga asana, which are the postures. And the purpose of the postures are actually meant to establish the ability for the body to sit in meditation. So that's where the yoga asana actually comes from. In the West, we do typically use it and practice it as a form of exercise and a way to tone the body and things like that. But the actual original intention is to prepare the body for sitting meditation.
Correct. Mm-hmm. All right. But then where's the link to service?
The link to service. So the four paths of yoga, Raja Yoga is called the royal path, and that's where a lot of the asana practice actually comes from that you see in the West. And then the Jhana, which is the path of yoga through knowledge. And then bhakti is one of those paths as well. So it's almost like a different line. So there's actually no postures in bhakti. It's just how to learn how to have a relationship with God, how to know God through being in a relationship with God. And there's different kind of relationships, but all of those relationships, it's very intuitive. If you think about how you interact with and reciprocate with family members or with friends. You know, you do things for them and it endears them to you and it strengthens the relationship. So in bhakti, you see God as a person. We call it the supreme personality of Godhead. So it's the same God as any other God, but we recognize the supreme person. And then you cultivate that relationship through service. So you learn to do different things kind of for God as this person in your life.
Wait a minute. That sounds like Christianity.
Oh, yes.
Wait. So I enjoy about the show, I call it Crossroads, and yes. It's where things overlap. Mm-hmm. Typically, we talk about where a person's everyday life will overlap with their faith life, but you as a practitioner have also opened a center. So like in the same sense, a bit like that I'm a clergy person, I wouldn't interview another clergy person because then you're just talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. But what I enjoy about this conversation is, and I was hoping to get there, where is this overlap with other Abrahamic faiths, particularly Christianity?
Oh, yes.
And what you just said, those words that you used, could come out of the mouth of a Christian. Mm-hmm. Now, you've grown up in America, but maybe have not practiced Christianity, but you are surrounded by it. So could you talk just a little bit more about where you see the overlap?
I can, yeah. And I can actually tell you that in our tradition, the people that I would recognize as being advanced practitioners of bhakti really, have very close relationships with people in other faiths, Christian faiths, Muslim faiths. And when they're together, the conversations they have, like you wouldn't know they were in different faiths. So I do see a lot of overlap, and we recognize, Jesus Christ as, a person that if we aspired to be like Jesus, then we would be practicing bhakti mm-hmm. in its, purest form, for sure. So and because bhakti is a yogic tradition, there are a lot of, I guess you would say, Indian cultural things that can come along with it, but it's not essential for the practice.
Okay. Well, I think that's a really good point of clarification for what I keep calling just basically modern Western Americans, right? Who may have only been exposed, let's say, to Christianity. That's a great explanation. So I like the way that you describe how even though it might be linked to a particular culture, the practice itself in a way transcends the culture.
It does, yes. And that in terms of the center, even though, you might come and see images of Krishna, who is a Hindu deity, that is not essential to bhakti. And the nice thing about it is that if somebody came to bhakti center from a different faith and wanted to offer, something there, then we wouldn't exclude that. A persons from all walks of faiths are welcome as teachers or as practitioners.
Well, that might not be a bad place to stop and ask. So I keep bringing up this idea that we are in Western society and you're practicing something that we would loosely just define as an Eastern religion, right? How did you come to it?
Well, I was a seeker from very early on in my life. I grew up in a very difficult household where there was, just a lot of things that contributed to me as a person feeling unsafe, imbalanced, and, just really questioning, like, what is the purpose of this life? Because, from where I'm coming from, it's just a whole lot of suffering. So pretty much as soon as I could read, I was, you know, looking for answers. And I actually was born into a family that considered themselves Catholic, and I had a first communion, and I would go to church. But when I was there, I wasn't really finding these answers to my questions, like, what is the purpose of this life? You know, how can I transcend this suffering? Basically, that was the biggest question. So the first answers I got were actually from the Buddhist faith, and the, you know, concepts like nonviolence and just really existing in, you know, a state of peace. Some of my first teachers were like Thich Nhat Hanh, and I had also read the Tao Te Ching, and you know, so other, and it was really like more like, you know, these Eastern philosophies that just really appealed to me, like peace, coexistence, nonviolence. But I was finding it hard to find a community to practice in and teachers that could actually, you know, I could interact with on a more personal level. It was, you know, the books were limiting in that, in the capacity. So the first organization that I found that had this community that was accessible to me was the International Society of Krishna Consciousness that I mentioned earlier. And I met one of the practitioners of that faith, commonly known as Hare Krishna. Some of you might recognize that term. And he was practicing as a monk, and he was actually traveling up to the college where I was enrolled as a student, and started, you know, kind of sharing some of his experience and philosophy with me. And so I started going to the temple. And at that point, I was pretty pretty sure that Buddhism had a lot to offer. And I would almost say I identified myself as a Buddhist. But when I started hearing from the Bhagavad Gita, which is their, the main text in International Society for Krishna Consciousness, I realized there were a lot more answers, and the philosophy was much more expansive. So I joined them, and I've been practicing in that faith. And really, bhakti is the path. So practicing on the bhakti path for many, many years, until recently, where I've kind of, you know, even I would say strayed a little bit or gone off that path, in the sense that I'm not part of the organization anymore, but I still would consider myself a person of bhakti yoga.
I've got to ask, but you don't have to answer. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you started out growing up in a family that you would define as Catholic, mm-hmm. Irish Catholic. Did you use that, or did
Italian
I say
Catholic.
That in my head? Okay, Italian Catholic. You have moved away in this sense, right? That you decided that what was best for you is to practice your faith in a different way. How's that working with your family?
Well, I have to say, even though my mother was born into a Catholic family and my father was as well, my mother, and this was a source of a lot of the kind of adversity and difficulty in my childhood, was also mentally ill. So she had bipolar disorder. And from the time that she started having manic episodes, and, you know, as a health counselor, I recognize mental imbalance, like, as, you know, intrinsically, it's also connected to a, your mind goes into places that we might look at as sick, but they also open you up to different things. So she, as a mentally ill person, was exposed to things that opened up her mind, so that she was looking beyond her own religious and the spiritual self, and she was actually exposing me to a lot of things that were outside of a typical, like, you know, Catholic tradition. So I would, you know, as a young child, go to like past life regression workshops, or you know, like spiritual fairs.
Did you find out who you were in your past life?
You know, I think I might have identified a past life as a Native American, like, shaman. And interestingly enough, in my modern life, like in today, somebody did tell me that I had some shamanic life. So
And you opened the bhakti center.
And I opened the bhakti center, and I have some shamans working there. But I don't really know about all that. It wasn't a traditional Catholic upbringing. And my mom, you know, when I became a Hare Krishna, was very accepting, and she would come with me to temple. And I actually was vegetarian and she became vegetarian. So I would say I think I had a big effect on my family and their spiritual, you know, kind of and religious beliefs. And we all were kind of affecting each other, you know. My dad, so both my parents are deceased now. And when my mom died, she was pretty young. And she didn't necessarily specify what she wanted to do with, you know, at the end of her life. So I incorporated elements of Christianity and bhakti and you know, Hare Krishna religious aspects to her. And I think that she would have been very happy with the outcome. She was actually cremated, and I brought some of her ashes to distribute in the the Yamuna River in India. And then I also brought some to Assisi and buried them in the garden of St. Francis's San Damiano Church.
Did they let you, or did you just sneak it?
No, I just went back there. There's like an olive grove behind there, and I, you know, just walked over there. And, you know, I'm sure they would have been
with somebody looking out at you.
But yeah, it was really interesting because being in Assisi, which is one of the places my mom always wanted to visit, because she was ultimately a follower of Jesus, and you know, even though she didn't go to Catholic church regularly, she always loved Jesus. And she always wanted to go there. And so being there, I felt very close to her. But I also felt like, you know, as far as feeling like you're in a spiritual place and being uplifted by the environment and the consciousness, it had the same effect on me that, you know, being in India had. So, yeah, I would definitely go back.
Well, I'm glad you said that because, again, going back to that idea of crossroads and the intersection of different faith practices, you know, kind of makes the statement that you could be in one holy place or another and still feel the holiness and experience it, even though it might not be the way you normally do.
Definitely.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, and the people that I interacted there, there was actually a woman who came up to me during the service at that church. And because, you know, when I was little, you know, we used to go up and get communion, and I don't really remember what we were doing with it, but I don't think it was a big deal if you walked away from the altar and then, you know, took it on the way back to your pew. But at the San Damiano church, I kind of like took it with me. And so somebody came back to me after and said, you know, it's really important that you honor that in front of the priest. And I said, okay. So we ended up talking, and this woman, you know, was really devout, and she'd been, you know, associated with this church for quite a while. But we started talking, and I told her why I was there. She ended up inviting me back to her house after, and we had this wonderful conversation. She gave me her, you know, address. We ended up writing letters to each other. So it was just a really wonderful, you know, connection. And I'm pretty sure anyone from any faith that walked in there that looking for a spiritual connection would have found it, you know.
It's funny you tell that story. In seminary, we were taught, don't let anyone walk away with the bread, the host, because they might be satanic,
right,
and they might use
it
for a black mass.
Yep.
And I still don't know what to do with that piece of information.
Yeah, I had never
Fascinating.
Heard that.
Yeah, yeah. One of the terms that you used when we were talking earlier is kirtan?
Kirtan, yes.
Kirtan?
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
So kirtan is big in bhakti, and especially within ISKCON, the organization that I was, you know, part of for many years and still, you know, respect and admire. And basically what kirtan is I talked about how it was important for me to have community in my spiritual practice, you know, and be able to kind of come together with other people. So kirtan is a way that within bhakti, we come together and celebrate, you know, and try to connect with God through chanting God's names and, you know, and doing it together in like a call and response type fashion. So opposed to like a typical concert where you're just going and listening to the music, at a kirtan, the leader calls out the mantra and we respond with the mantra. So everyone's, you know, participating. And by chanting these names of God, it elevates the environment and everyone connects together, but on this very kind of, you know, spiritual and, you know, it can be really ecstatic. We use that word a lot with kirtan. It can get really ecstatic because of all the spiritual energy in
like
the room.
Like whirling dervishes?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I was almost kidding.
Yeah, no, okay. No, just like that. All right, great. But, you know, and even kirtans, you know, a lot of times there'll be people sitting down and singing, but a lot of times people will get up and start dancing. And within ISKCON, it can really get pretty lively with the dancing and
that
jumping.
That sounds great. Yeah. What are some of the names of God that you use? Are they translatable?
Yes.
Or you have to? Okay.
No, Krishna. So the name of God, Krishna, means all attractive. So as a person, when Krishna manifests as a person, he manifests with all of the attractive qualities. So to look at him,
physically attractive,
sort of, okay. But even as you know, what he can do, what he's capable of, he has all of the best qualities of a person. And all attractive, meaning that everyone can be attracted to Krishna because he actually has different forms. He manifests himself in different forms to attract different people. So this is one of the things about within bhakti that we recognize that people are attracted to different things, so even in developing that relationship with Krishna, some people really relate to developing that relationship as a friend, like, Krishna's my friend, he's my buddy, he's my pal, I'm going to do things for him. Or Krishna as a baby, he manifests in baby form and his baby name is Gopal. So if you're like a very motherly person and you want to worship God as a baby, you worship Gopal. And then as a lover, Govinda. So, he manifests as, we recognize God as male and female. So it's actually a Radha and Krishna. And there's Radha as the feminine aspect and Krishna is the male aspect. But a lot of times you'll see, representations of Krishna with his female consort and, as a lover. Also as a parent, sometimes you might want to identify yourself as the child and worship Krishna as, your superior or your parents. So yeah, it's all these different mellows or relationships, or the word we use is rasas, what rasa attracts you when you're developing your relationship with God.
What's interesting to me about that as a Christian is, so it's about the parent, right? And so some people really, we call it Marian devotion, right? And I think part of that is to respect Mary as the parent. And then you talked about as the infant, you got the infant Jesus, and there's a lot of theology and prayer around that. And then I think also even the idea of the first description of being the God that you're attracted to. Just like I'm interpreting that as being incredibly charismatic. But the fourth one about sexual attraction is the place where I think Christianity really has to figure something out. Because I think historically Christians have done a terrible job recognizing the truth about human sexuality, and it's really done us a terrible disservice. So I would say, just as a sort of a casual listener who practices a different faith, I have a lot of respect for the idea that what you're describing, there's no shying away from all the realities of human nature. And I think that when we suppress any reality of our human nature, we're really not walking down a healthy path. So maybe one day Christianity will catch up. I don't know about that, but maybe. Where are you today? As I'm listening to you, you are quite open to walking a path. And anyone growing spiritually will not be in the same place today as they were yesterday, for example. So where would you describe yourself today?
Like I mentioned, I became associated with the ISKCON as a young person. And I just turned 41, last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And, Ayurveda has, exposed me to things, particularly as part of my own spiritual practice and meditation, that I think maybe not transcends, but goes just a little bit outside of the kind of path that I've been on for some time. So I'm expanding my mind and practices as a basis of that, and really just, honing in on my own spiritual practices and how I can further myself along my path. And not saying that bhakti isn't a part of that, but just opening myself up to maybe some other practices, and having the center has been great for that, because I initially thought, okay, well, you know, I'm the bhakti yoga person and I'm the Ayurveda person, and other people will come and they'll be offering other things and we can all work in conjunction together. But now I'm seeing that I actually want to learn what these other people have to offer. And so not being really wedded to my path in ISKCON, you know, allows me to say, okay, like, let's try this. And, you know, let's see how, where this fits into what I'm doing. So I've opened myself up to the community and what other people have to offer, and not just the teachers, but, you know, the students as well, the people that are coming in off the street and they have their own experiences they want to share.
Are you comfortable these days defining yourself?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, because I would say that I would, if I was going to say what path am I walking, the answer would be Ayurveda.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really a religion.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is my path. And mm-hmm. and there are beliefs and practices, and I have a teacher. The school that I'm working very closely with is Hale Pule, which means house of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And the founder of Hale Pule, her name is Myra Lewin, and I very much respect her, and recently had the opportunity to be with her and do some training, direct training. And I think it's funny, because when I was there for a specific purpose. They were training me in how to mix Ayurvedic herbs, because I'm going to be doing that for them. But I realized when I was there that she was having an effect on me and my consciousness. And sometimes, you know, we don't pick our teachers. We just all of a sudden realize, wow, this person has really kind of helped me and given me some knowledge that I benefited from. And that was kind of how it went.
But I think that says something nice about you, because you have to be open.
Yes.
If you're not open, you can't be receptive.
Yeah.
And obviously you're open, and therefore you received. And that sounds really nice.
Yeah. And the practices were definitely part of that, just being there in her community. And they do a beautiful morning practice that involves meditation and yoga and mantra. And I feel like it definitely helped me to open up in some new ways.
We are out of time. If you could leave us with like a sentence or two, what would that be?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do now and that I didn't always do was to speak your truth and just be true to who you are and your experience, and, you know, look to answers within yourself, because they're all there. And this has to do with, you know, any answers for your health, your well-being, you know, try to find that connection to God. They're all the answers are there.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Everybody, we had a great time speaking with Lisa Day Lewis, who runs the Bhakti Center here in Willimantic. This is WHUS 91.7 Stores out of the campus of UConn, and this show is Crossroads, and I'm your host, Reverend Brian Blair. I hope you had a great time listening today, and we will catch up with you soon.
Try to flag a ride.